Hey, Sal.
Hank, what's going on? We haven't worked a case in years.
I just bought my car at Carvana, and it was so easy. Too easy.
Think something's up?
You tell me. They got thousands of options.
Mm-hmm.
Found a great car at a great price.
Uh-huh.
And it got delivered the next day.
It sounds like Carvana just makes it easy to buy your car, Hank.
Yeah, you're right. Case closed.
Buy your car today on Carvana. Delivery fees may apply.
Is it a crisis? Hi, I'm Jarvis Smith, and my new show, Lean Into Clean, will inspire, impress, and inform. What can we all do to clean up our lives so the next generations and, of course, our beautiful planet can thrive? Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus, and restore the natural way so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. Welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean. I'm Jarvis Smith. This is UK Health Radio. I hope you're all having a happy Halloween that's just passed and Guy Fawkes night tomorrow night. So we're right in the middle of this autumnal winter season. I've got a great guest for you today. Somebody I've been hanging out with quite a lot. When we get together, we just chat. And I thought, wow, we need to do this on radio. So today's guest is going to be joining us. I'm not going to give away who it is yet, but just wanted to start with some news. As you know, my wife and I, Katie's the editor, and we run the online platform called mygreenpod.com. We also publish a magazine every 2 months. I just wanted to give you a bit of an update on those of you that are interested in sustainability and the developments in the natural world. We've got COP29 coming up very soon in Azerbaijan, in Baku, which is another oil state. And many people are kind of, you know, up in arms, really, about the conference of parties when it comes to climate being held in oil states. So we'll talk about that a bit later down the line. But this recent COP, it was COP16, which is a conference of parties for biodiversity. It happened in Colombia. I didn't go because, you know, I try not to go to everything unless I have to be there. And I didn't necessarily have to be there for this one. But I did have some amazing friends and just experts that did attend. And I wanted to give you a bit of an update. So on November the 2nd, we published this story. Essentially, the title is COP16 Closes. So here are some of the successes. But COP16 in Cali ends in disappointment, which is annoying, with crucial finance agreements delayed. So let me read this out to you so you can just get a basis of what this conference of parties was about. So this is bearing in mind this was 2nd of November. Early this morning, 196 countries at the COP16 UN Biodiversity Conference in Colombia agreed to establish a new global fund dedicated to sharing the benefits derived from using digital sequence information, that's DSI, from genetic resources. However, after a marathon 24-hour final negotiation sprint, discussions around the establishment of a new wider biodiversity fund, as well as other key decisions, have been postponed and the meeting suspended because there were no longer enough negotiators in the room to take decisions. So often these things are always left to the last minute, which is, as it says, frustrating. It says this outcome risks undermining confidence in and the implementation of the coming Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework, which is the KMGBF. Now, the Cali Fund, the decision on the Cali Fund states that companies using digital sequence information, which is DSI, from genetic biodiversity resources in their products should pay a portion of their profits or revenues into the fund. While the disbursement details are still being finalized, it has been agreed that 50% of the fund will be allocated to indigenous peoples and local communities, either directly or through governments. This will enable these communities, including women and youth, really important, to finally share in the profits. Now, there's a quote here from Tanya Steele, who's the CEO of the WWF, the World Wildlife Foundation. Now, despite valiant efforts from Colombia and a positive engagement from the UK delegation, as well as many others from around the world, this isn't the outcome anyone wanted. Failure to reach an agreement or financing the global biodiversity framework puts the landmark agreement in jeopardy. Without adequate funding, there is no chance of reaching the goal of halting and reversing nature loss by 2030. She goes on, let's not forget what's at stake here. We stand on the edge of a precipice. If we don't achieve the goal, we face catastrophic tipping points from which there will be no going back, such as the loss of the Amazon rainforest and death of coral reefs. However, the new Cali Fund, although imperfect and with many details still to be ironed out, is an important step forward. It means that companies profiting from nature through the use of genetic information make a small contribution to conserve biodiversity, with 50% of the funds going to indigenous peoples and local communities. Unfortunately, contributions to the fund will be voluntary, but we intend to push hard for companies to pay their fair share. Now, this goes on to say, negotiations around the establishment of a wider new biodiversity fund for developing countries have been suspended. Negotiations about monitoring progress progressed throughout the past 2 weeks, focusing on filling gaps in the monitoring framework and on the modalities for a global review process in 2026 and 2030, which would help to hold countries accountable for implementing the KMGBF. Regrettably, these negotiations could not be concluded before the COP was suspended. Now, this goes on to say, and this is important, developed countries are lagging behind on the commitments to provide 20 billion, that's 15.5 billion pounds, $20 billion annually in international biodiversity financing by 2025. And pledges to the interim funding mechanism, the Global Biodiversity Framework Fund in Cali were also meager, although the UK contribution of 45 million was higher than many others. The fund currently totals $407 million, that is. Actions around identifying and repurposing subsidies harmful to nature have made little headway since the KMGBF was adopted. So this article does go on. You can read more about it, but the negotiations on the biodiversity finance here in Cali was an enjoyable as root canal surgery. So, there's some interesting, negative quotes here. I think people were very, very, very disappointed. Now, what I find astounding about this, and this is just my personal take, you think about every business on the planet, every source of energy, every service company that uses energy for its services, every product, every material, everything we buy, everything we eat, everything we wear, etc., etc. Where does it all come from? Nature. Every single thing. And the point of this is that we have taken, taken, taken. The earth is clearly crying for help, shouting at us nearly every day with floods, earthquakes, whatever it might be, heat, temperatures rising, masses of water being dumped, as has just happened in Spain, which is literally just, a few hundreds of miles away. I mean, very, very close to us. And catastrophic climate catastrophes are happening daily. So the earth is speaking to us. We are not listening. We are continuing to take. And I think it's time for us to just consider, at the very least, where everything that we use and eat and drive in and speak on our phones and et cetera, all comes from nature. So I think at the very least, we can possibly just open our hearts and give praise and gratitude in an indigenous cultural type way before we eat something, before we drink something, before we use something, before we put something on. We could maybe just give thanks to nature in appreciation and gratitude, because that might be the very thing that begins to rebalance the scales. What I do know is this planet is very wise, is conscious, is living, breathing. If we want to call it Mother Nature, or the mother of our Earth, she provides sustenance for everything, materials for business, energy for us to have heat, etc. Yet, how have we lost our connection to the Earth? How have we lost that connection of the very source of our, well, nourishment on every single account? So I just pray and ask you all that, just consider nature in all your actions and all your daily activities. Speak about nature more as being, the sustenance and provider of everything, as we used to. We've just had a harvest festival recently. We've got Christmas coming up. Now, Christmas, of course, has been commercialized by the Pepsi Colas of the world and things like that. But actually, it was an opportunity to, give gifts humbly at the time of the winter solstice, which of course is a natural cycle of time. So I invite everybody to remember their indigenous ways, remember their sacred ways, remember your pagan and druid ways. And if you're from another country, remember those indigenous ways from wherever you're from. And let's try and tap out of the current man-made time and economic system and try and feel back into the natural system, the natural circadian way of living. And it may be that we reconnect with nature in such a way that we won't want to damage her anymore, and we'll want to try and restore and rejuvenate her. So that's me off my soapbox for today. I hope that news was useful for you. If you really do care about anything when it comes to sustainability, make sure you check out mygreenpod.com. There's over 6,000 articles there. There's 40 magazines. There's plenty, plenty, plenty of content. So that brings me nicely, nicely, nicely to today's guest. Now, as I said, Ben and I have been hanging out. So today's guest is Ben. I hope I'm going to get his surname right. I think it's VB. Is that correct, Ben?
It's Viva. Yeah. Okay.
Viva!
Okay.
Okay, so I want to say vibe when I see it, because it's like you are a vibe. Let me just tell you this quickly. So Ben Viva is a SXSW winner and Oscar shortlisted producer who has lived in the US, Denmark, UK, and been involved in developing films, TV series, live events for almost 20 years. He is a social impact strategist who has run campaigns for groups including Netflix, Vice, UNEP, Sony Pictures, really, really big hitters. We're going to chat today about three important subjects that when Ben and I said, what should we talk about? He came up with these. It was mental health, propaganda, and death. Now, I don't know if you agree, but I think these are pretty cool subjects. And one thing I wanted to point out is that, two men having a chat in this current time that we're in, where there's a lot of adversity at the moment about, men and leaders and, social media influencers and everything else. And when Ben and I were chatting, I was like, well, we're just two guys, we're family men, we've got children, we care about issues, we're talking about them. So we just thought we'd have a chat today. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
It's an absolute pleasure. Which one do you want to start with? Mental
Oh.
health, propaganda, or death? I tell you what, before we do that, Ben, having read out your very tiny bio, tell us a bit more about yourself. Tell us a bit more about your background, because I would say you're a cultural influencer. You influence culture. But just tell us a bit about what you're doing at the moment, where you've been, what you've been involved in.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I'm originally from the Northwest US. So I grew up in Oregon and kind of in smaller areas, so outside of giant metropolitan cities. And then I ended up largely living in giant metropolitan cities. So I lived in Los Angeles and Las Vegas and in New York City, and now in London. So it's been an interesting journey as a storyteller, as someone who really believes in amplifying culture and trying to understand what it is to be in, people's shoes, right? So it has been fascinating to see, live in different places that are both small and big, because there are big culture shocks between them. And I think there's definitely a different like perception and interpretation in general that people take between those. So my main background's in film production. So I worked on TV and movies for a long time. But the long story short, you work on anything you can at the beginning. So I was doing stuff like World Poker Tour and the Real Housewives franchise. And but after a while, you might feel like you're kind of just providing empty calories into the ether, right? And and I don't like demonize people who enjoy watching that
But
stuff, but why?
these are big TV shows you're talking about, right? These are like reaching millions and millions of people.
Exactly. And a show like the Real Housewives franchise, I understand why people like watching them. It's just a very different experience making them. And I wanted to be more involved with making things and amplifying things that I felt, just provided me with more purpose and put a spotlight on people who kind of really don't get as many opportunities for their voices to be heard, or people whose voices are, people who are just outright neglected or abused. So their perspectives really aren't ever, given a chance to shine. And so that's really how I came to where I am now, and trying to support and produce projects like about grieving children, or did one on some of the last women who have survived the Gulag concentration camps. Most of those women are in their 90s now. So some of their last opportunities to really share and document in a public way. So those are the kind of stories I'm really, gravitating towards now. And
Lovely, lovely, but brilliant. I can feel that. I can feel the transition. I mean, so many people I speak to, certainly in my kind of network, in the circles that I move in, so many people have come from a corporate background, an entertainment background, and just kind of had that moment where they've gone, I can't do this anymore. I need to change. I need to. And you talked about purpose. Was there a defining moment for you, or was it often people talk about, a child might have come home from school and mentioned something, or, there was an illness, or, was there a defining moment for you where you really tapped into your purpose?
I would say both. There are different moments, personally and professionally. I think the main professional one was actually, speaking of Real Housewives, I'll tell a short story. I was working on the Atlanta one and their spinoffs, and one of the housewives—I don't know if I should name her—but one of the housewives has several children, and they were all at the time underage. They were all minor age. Meaning they, if the parents said they're going to be on film today, then they're going to be on film today, right? So the kids really, really don't have a say if when you're literally shooting in their home. And I felt like the children were being exploited, and the oldest daughter was a teenager, and then she was starting to express like, no, like I, this is I don't I feel humiliated. I really don't want to. And so the mom was literally, knowing it would cause more drama and drama stirs up ratings, was intentionally making sure that her daughter was humiliated for the camera.
Oh my gosh.
And I was there, right? I'm there, for this. And I didn't really have a voice. I was like a coordinator, mid-level role. So I didn't have an authority to just, put a stop to it, right? But I did speak up, and no one listened. No one really cared. No one listened, right? That was, the bread and butter of the company and the network. That franchise was their bread and butter. So yeah, no one really cared. And that was my turning point professionally, where I was like, I can't do this anymore.
Good for you. Good for you.
I feel terrible. And if I see these kids grow up to be just like their parents, I'm going to know exactly why, they didn't have a chance. Like, right, they're just kind of thrown to the dogs. And in that world too, it's very easy to exploit people. So anyway, yeah, that was where I took that turn. And personally, a big moment for me, outside of profession, was leaving the US. leaving the US was a big step, right? A lot of people said I was crazy, and I have a daughter, and my daughter was about to start school age, and they said multiple parents said you should get your daughter a bulletproof backpack and practice at-home shooter drills. And this was living in New York City, and she would have started school the next year somewhere. And I said, nope, I'm not accepting that as a normalization of, of life, right? If that's okay for other people, okay. I don't understand how that's become just okay for people. And immediately we just started looking for options and
Yeah, and you
found
ended
out
up
what
in
we did.
Europe. Let's hold it there. We've got to jump to a commercial break, man, but that's a perfect opportunity, I think, just to take a break. Don't go away, you guys. We're going to hear the rest of Ben's story. We'll be back here in a second.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. This is Jarvis Smith. This is UK Health Radio on my show, Lean Into Clean. I'm here with Ben. He's just talking about his wake-up call from working on a TV show, being hit hard by the fact that I'm not sure whether they're actors or real people in this show, but anyway, the people that are on the show, wanting to force a child into a situation that she wasn't comfortable about, and it was a bit of a wake-up call for Ben. And then hearing about, gosh, I mean, as a parent, if I was told that I needed to prepare my daughter to go to school with a, for shootings, for want of a better example, which is happens a lot in the States, right? I would have done exactly the same as you. Let's get my child out of here as quickly as possible. So, where were you going to head to? I'd probably head to the Himalayas or something if I.
I mean, really had no idea.
No.
We just started looking for any professional opportunities, right, to get a job that could allow us to explore somewhere else. And Denmark happened to be the first opportunity that worked. But we looked at the UK first, and went to Berlin, went to Eindhoven, Netherlands, right, and so Copenhagen worked out.
Yeah, nice. No, and what was it, work that took you there? Was it TV related work?
No, so actually it was so my wife Jennifer had an opportunity with Sybo Games, and I actually did some work for them too. They make Subway Surfers mobile games.
Got it, got it, got it. So that's what took you there. And then, I mean, I must just say, just for everybody listening, Ben and I met. I think we'd been introduced a couple of times, but we met properly at the People Environment Achievement Awards in June last year as part of London Climate Action Week. Ben was representing, a few friends, and happened to be in Europe, and representing OMM. As you know, OMMM, which is our kind of spiritual, conscious, sustainable, impactful, social influencing, mass mobilizing movement, which I've talked about many times. So Ben reconnected properly through that. And it turns out that Ben also is involved in sustainability films. So tell us a little bit about, have you actually been involved in sustainability films in a big way, or is it more about social impact? Just give us a little bit of an insight to your world on that side.
I mean, my main focus has been social impact, because I think that there's a lot of, and I like showing people this connective tissue where a lot of different areas really connect back to the climate crisis and the reasons why things have gotten to where they were with the climate. But in terms of my activity with film, yeah, like for Netflix, I produced impact campaigns exclusively around climate titles. So like Don't Look Up, the Adam McKay film, or David Attenborough has one called Breaking Boundaries, which is great. He like breaks down some of the harder points, to make it more accessible. Or Barack Obama has one called Our Great National Parks.
So you were involved in the social market media marketing campaigns for those massive films. I mean, we all know those. We all know those films, movies. Okay, wow. What was involved there? What did that look like? You were given a budget and you basically had to get it in front of as many people as possible, or you know.
Kind of. It was, so I was actually working for a group called Countisyn, which is also partnered with UN Live.
Oh yes, yep.
So there were a lot of UN advisors and stuff to be able to talk to. And so I had written a proposal for Countisyn to do impact campaigns for Netflix, because we had this aggregator that could, keep track of how many people were taking steps and how those steps, everything from reducing your energy bill and cycling more and things like that, and how that actually was quantifying, carbon reduction.
Right.
And it's always hard for anything in the aggregate to know if it's super accurate, right? But Countisyn had a pretty good bead on that. And so for Netflix, we created a loop. So like for Don't Look Up, right? We would drive people to this site we built, where we would encourage people to take steps. And the cast from Don't Look Up was really helpful. Leo DiCaprio made his own video. The whole cast made one, just talking about. I mean, when you get Meryl Streep saying, "This is probably the most important movie I've ever been a part of," that says a lot, right? And so we drove the campaign there and helping to loop people back to like watch the film and get encouraged, to do more and just think about it and read more about it and educate themselves.
Nice. I think you know what, Ben? I think that we've got a really good kind of insight to you as a person now, just in terms of a bit of background. Let's get into the things that we wanted to discuss. I'm just wondering whether we should play your first record before we do that.
Sure.
I think I always ask my guests just to come with a couple of songs that are soundtracks to either the climate crisis, if that's what they're involved in, or soundtracks to their lives. Tell us the first song that you've chosen.
Yeah, so the first song is Billie Eilish, What Was I Made For? Most people know it from the Barbie movie, but it's really poignant for me. It's a song I listen to a lot, especially when I want to feel more vulnerable, and kind of go to a deeper, more candid place.
Nice. So this is Billie Eilish. What Was I Made For? Enjoy. Wow, thanks for choosing that song, Ben. Why did you choose that? Really moving.
Honestly, as I describe myself as a fairly gentle and soft-spoken person, and I have not cried more than when I listened to that song. It really, and I like putting myself in places where I feel vulnerable, where I can kind of let my walls down, and just kind of contemplate a lot of things. And for some reason, I also appreciate Billie Eilish as a person. I think she's a pretty genuine person. I love her dynamic with her and her brother. It's very sweet, and sincere. So yeah, just all of that culminates into that song really just providing a lot for me emotionally.
Nice, beautiful. I love that. I love that how you've just kind of honestly spoken about you like putting yourself into vulnerable, sensitive situations, being a sensitive guy. I think that's really, really commendable. I will agree with you about Billie Eilish. There's something very, very special about what she's doing musically. So I like that she's broken out of the kind of pop culture thing,
Yeah.
which is quite hard to do at the moment, although she's still a pop
Absolutely.
artist. But have you seen, just a bit of a curveball, have you seen The Wild Robot?
I have not.
Oh my God, you need to go and see The Wild Robot. We've been twice now. I mean, first time cried, second time cried some more. It is, I mean, be prepared. Take a box of tissues. It is the most stunning, beautiful kids' film. I won't give you any spoiler alerts. Just go and see it. Soundtrack, epic. Movie, epic. Story, epic.
Oh,
Visuals,
snap.
epic. Oh, man,
Thank you. I think I'm
massive.
sold.
Go and do it, please. So let's talk about some of that. Let's talk about some of that male sensitivity. I mean, we were chatting a couple of weeks ago. We'd just been hanging out a couple of sustainability shows and. You know, we were talking about just the difficulty of being a man these days and, in working out whether you've got it right or wrong. And it's such a minefield. And I'm not saying that at all, anything against women. I know you've had a really, really hard time with it, but we are men, so we're going to talk about being male. Let's talk about your first subject matter, mental health. What why did you want to talk about mental health?
It's largely invisible to a lot of people, right? And even when you describe, something that might be going on with you, there's still tons of nuance within that, right? Like I have something called complex PTSD, right? Complex post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Really?
And
I did not know that.
but if you describe that or just mention that to some people, right, who aren't as, I guess, eloquent or educated on such subjects, I've heard responses like, "Oh, well, I've gone through hard things too." Right? And so I think mental health is something that a lot of the masses really need more compassion on, understanding on, education on, and our society as a whole, especially after a massive event like COVID, has undergone a huge mental health crisis, and a lot of people don't know what to do.
I think that's absolutely right. I don't want to pry into your own, unless you want to talk about it, of course. But I mean, there's neurodiversity now, which is becoming a lot more of a common accepted kind of terminology. I'll be honest, I don't know a lot about it, but I hear people say it a lot. Do you think that is a better way to describe, the complexities and the nuances of some of the mental health issues around that we're there's a lot of neurodiversity that no two brains are the same, no two lifestyles are the same, no two impacts are
Yeah,
the same.
I think it's a fair term. I think it's e that's an easily accessible term,
Yeah.
right? If you want, because there's so many different things, and some are things that are clinically diagnosable, right?
Yeah.
And there's also things like anxiety, depression, which have a wide degree, right, of where you could live on that spectrum. Some people have a very daily need to have, care, have medication, things like that around those issues. And some people don't. For some people it's minor, but it's still consistent in their life. So no, I do. I think neurodiversity is a fair way to address it, because it also addresses that there can be you can be born with stuff. There are, genetic conditions, but you can also acquire conditions, right, over your life. And you can also conquer ones, right? You can have phases where symptoms are activated and when they're not, and so yeah, there's
Yeah, no, good. Thank you for that. So mental health, what are you kind of drawn to when you hear the word mental health? What
I
comes
mean,
up for you?
compassion and empathy, honestly, it's I think we all carry some kind of baggage. And I think obsessing over a diagnosis is not really in our best interest. I think we all carry things with us emotionally, right? Mentally, and a lot of us really don't necessarily know what to do with that, what to do with those things, and how to share those things, and how to not be afraid of people weaponizing those things against us, right? When something's a trigger for us. And so that's why I think about it a lot. I think caring about it as a subject matter drives us to be more empathetic.
Yeah, nice. I think that I really appreciate you saying that, because actually empathy and compassion, it goes across everything, doesn't it? Every form of division is either kind of dictated to us, i.e. we're born into the system that's divided, whatever that division is: religion, countries, color, rich or poor, you know what I mean? I mean, it just goes on and on and on. But actually, if we can have compassion and empathy for everybody, that is the beginning of the balm, isn't it? The healing. Yeah, I'm going to have to cut to another commercial break, but I really want to get into this some more with you. I'd like to get into the propaganda side of it, because propaganda actually seems to be one of the biggest issues around right now. We've got this kind of woke movement going on, and that's creating all this kind of idealisms. And then we got, I mean, anyway, we're going to cut to a commercial break. We're going to come back. We're going to stick with mental health, and we're going to move into the propaganda around mental health. Back in a second. Don't go away, you guys. It's going to get juicy.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. Earth Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, welcome back. This is Jarvis Smith, Leaning to Clean on UK Health Radio. We are talking about mental health with Ben here, who's our guest of today. Ben, mental health, we just kind of, you know, I guess overviewed it. It's such a broad, deep, challenging, emotional subject. I just want to say this before we get into more of your thoughts. I understand the human condition to be split into four categories. There's the physical aspect of being human. There's the mental aspect. There's the emotional aspect, which I, obviously they're all linked. And then I believe there's a spiritual aspect. That's certainly my experience. And I think we've all become pretty good at the mental, physical, emotional, but not necessarily great at the spiritual. What do you think about that when I say that and we're talking about mental health? Like, what do you think about it?
Oh, no, I mean, it's a lot. It's a huge subject because I think, first of all, you know, when people think of the spiritual, I think there's just a lot of conflations right away, right? Like people conflating religion with faith and thinking that means the exact same thing.
Yeah. Right? And I don't mean religious at all. Right. I'm spiritual. Yep. Yeah.
Right. And people think of the word spiritual and don't necessarily think about the concept that there is a spiritual realm, right? We are corporeal bodies, but we might exist. There, you know, might be other planes and other realms, and we might exist in multiple dimensions. So our corporeal form is just, you know, a part of the life cycle we're on, right? There's all kinds of things, but I think regardless of what people believe, I think opening ourselves up to the conversation, though, is part of what it's about putting ourselves in other people's shoes, understanding vast perspectives. How can we do that if we don't ever have the conversation?
Yeah. Do you think there's a level of sensitivity that's required in order for people to be able to do that? Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Because it's OK. It's like if when you have a disagreement with someone, maybe even a best friend or a family member. And as soon as there is one, people have gone years afterwards not talking to each other because of disagreements, right? And so those moments can start to lay waste to huge portions of our lives because we're not able to engage in conversations that either we don't understand or there's different viewpoints on it or we're used to. And the spiritual elements, people are used to being told, if you believe this way, you're wrong. Right, you are not correct, that is if there is one right answer. And I think that's the part that drives us all away and actually hugely negatively affects our mental health, right? Because how do we know?
Absolutely.
We're small creatures on one planet.
I think that's the bit that I was kind of alluding to, is that kind of spiritual aspect. I describe the spiritual aspect as getting to know oneself, going inward, doing your meditation, you know, finding a sacred art, whether that's, you know, Tai Chi or yoga or walking in nature or whatever it might be.
Absolutely. I've tried, like, I love Qigong. That's been a great practice for me. I love yoga. Even within that, you know, I don't like the yoga that just totally crushes you.
Right? No, me neither.
For exercise. But I like the really calm, just breathing, you know, ones that help you feel at ease. Yeah, like there's so many practices, but those are things that all are just helpful outlets and helpful tools.
Yeah.
To your point, helps us center ourselves and give ourselves moments to just be.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is, and I'm really drawn to your entertainment background, you know, and actually, you know, the entertainment industry is really the industry that influences commerce in so many ways. It's not going to sell. It's not going to be a sell, is it? If people are happy and calm and peaceful and meditative and, you know, there's not much excitement in that, is there?
No, well, yeah, there's less drama in that.
There's less drama.
If everyone's doing okay, right? There was an economist who on TV was asked that question. The question was actually, what do you think of a cycling economy versus a hugely driving one? And he just, not to tell his whole answer, but he said something just like that. And he said, do you want my personal answer, or do you want my answer as an economist? Because clearly they were very, very different. And his real finality of that was, oh, for an economist, our society doesn't function if we have healthy people.
And we see, I mean, you talked about COVID earlier on and the PTSD that has come about. I mean, I've got a 3-year-old son, you know, the majority of his life was in lockdown. Do you know what I mean? It's like, luckily, we weren't in a city or in a flat, we were in the country, and it's a bit easier to manage. But, you know, I think there are lots and lots and lots of traumatic influences that we are, privy to or have access to on a daily basis, whether it's news, personal, you know, no money, et cetera, and that causes these issues. But let's kind of move on to propaganda a bit, because these are linked, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, there's a machine at play right now. There's, you know, wars, which, God, I mean, we are in, you wouldn't think, right, in the experiences that we have as human beings and the time that we've had to be human on the planet, that we'd still be at war, right? It's just, I mean, it's just absolutely crazy. And then you've got the kind of Trump, Kamala, you know, debate going on. The, you know, tomorrow is voting day. You know, these are big news issues right now. But what's your perspective on the propaganda machine? Why did you want to talk about it?
Oh, because I think, it really connects to mental health too, and the other things we've been addressing, and compassion, empathy, that propaganda really is stimulated by us not being curious, not being inquisitive, right? Not pushing any deeper for answers. No different than when you ask a friend, how are you doing? And they say, oh, I'm good, I'm fine. That's never really the answer. It's always something deeper than that. We just don't want to share. But who does the follow-up? And if we're not people who do the follow-up, get used to doing that, right? And also hearing that, receiving that from others, then we're not going to remain curious and inquisitive. And that's exactly how propaganda gets pushed in, and we just accept it.
Surface living, isn't it? Surface living.
And you don't even know how to see it, how to identify it after a while.
And we've become numb to it, haven't we, as well, because there's so much new. We're being bombarded by so much information that's influencing our energy at a frequency and vibrational level that we just kind of come numb to it. I love that. I remember saying to you, it was a brilliant thing you said a couple of weeks ago. I was talking about somebody that had died, and we're going to move on to death in a minute. And you said, well, you know, have you ever asked them, like, what did that person mean to you? You know, you say, oh, I've had a death in the family. Oh, I'm really sorry. Sending my condolences. And you were like, well, ask that person, what did that person mean to you? Like, what kind of lifestyle did you have together? You know what? And I just thought, wow, such simple, loving, compassionate, generous questions that we would avoid like no tomorrow, because we, you know, most of us wouldn't want to get into that kind of deeper level. So we're living at this surface level that can't be healthy, number one, because I'm sure we're here to experience life at its fullest. I mean, what a playground we've got of this earth. What a playground. Like, if you were making a game, this is the game you would make, right? This is like the ultimate game. But people forget that they are the joystick. You know, they've got the hands on the wheel.
And those places that are tough to go, I mean, like death, right? It's we assume without asking. So we assume that that's a dark conversation only. And mourning is as much about celebration as it is about sadness, right? When you're thinking back on loss, and the loss of a person is a huge one, right? When we think back on that, a lot of what we want to think about is celebrating their life, thinking about why we cared about them so much, and good times. And so, isn't that what, we should want to be thinking about and want to be sharing? Is, yeah, let me tell you about this person. Let me tell you what they meant to me. And I think just getting ourselves to go there, go to those places, we keep hiding from it. And that's not going to help us, like, be more armed to understand each other, embrace understanding of each other, if we can't talk about difficult things. And death is one of those ones that
Yeah.
it's inevitable.
Yeah, it is. One of the things that I often say about this thing that we are calling a climate crisis is that, is nature calling this a crisis, or is she just simply shouting in the only way that she knows how to get our attention? Probably more likely. And yet, every day, just yesterday or the last couple of days, 200, 300 people died in the floods in Spain and Valencia and places, and every day tens of thousands of children are dying from malnutrition, from water and food, across the world, and people are dying from wars. And death is like, I mean, it's such a well, the two things that they talk about, right, are death and taxes. I mean, let's just throw taxes out because that's clearly a man-made concept, but death is clearly not a man-made concept. Yet it's the subject that we just don't want to talk about. It's completely taboo. Yet every day we are hearing about hundreds of thousands of people that are dying across the planet because of the way that we're living in the world. It's just madness, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and because it is something that is inevitable and is so finite, like there's no reason that we shouldn't be able to get more comfortable dropping our apathy, right? And being able to talk to people about this and care. Because I mean, even probably you talked about like, clean drinking water for people, right? Like desalinization is apparently not a super difficult process and not super expensive to actually be able to do at scale. But yet the systems that we have in place don't prioritize it, when they could. And that can, and that leads to lots of deaths alone from people not having a drink of water. So yeah, I think apathy is one of these things we're fighting a lot against, right? If it's outside people's kind of regional bubble, they just don't want to think about it.
And they're clearly linked, aren't they? I mean, we've gone from mental health to propaganda to death. These things are clearly linked. And
Absolutely.
actually, they're three subjects that if people, if you take anything away from this show today, take away those three subjects and start to communicate those issues, or headings, should I say. They don't necessarily need to be an issue, but a heading, a subject matter, with people around you. Let's deepen the conversations. I think that's ultimately what you're saying, isn't it, Ben? It's like, let's just get below the surface and have heart to heart. And I think there's a lot of people out there. I'm really drawn to the kind of Joe Rogans of the world today, and these kind of just people that have created such a huge following, bigger than any news outlet, bigger than any TV outlet, just absolutely huge. And all they're doing is talking about everyday things with everyday people. Yes, they're people that have mainly, had an influence in the world, but what's wrong with that? We all want to have an influence, don't we, in some way, shape, or form.
Well, right, yeah, and even yeah, having those conversations with also with people who you know already aren't going to disagree with you on every subject or have the same take. I mean, isn't that what makes us all interesting? Is that we don't even you and your best friend don't always have the same take. That's why best friends don't always make great roommates.
It's funny, I was away with my wife last week. We went on a half term, and we were in a kind of it's called an oud house. It's basically a glass house up on the coast of Scotland. And there was a there was just us and the kids. We thought, let's let the kids watch a movie for a bit so we can have some time. And we just sat there chatting, and it was just lovely just to sit in each other's company, not really saying anything, but everything all at the same time. And it's like those moments are really magical. Ben, you know what? We've come to the end of the show. The time
Oh,
absolutely
snap.
flies. So I'm sorry that we haven't got too deeply into everything, and I do want to get your last song in. But any lasting thoughts you want to say, that you wished you had said that you hadn't?
I mean, really, just to reiterate, like, and I appreciate the kind of conversations you have on here, is just imploring people to get more comfortable doing follow-ups with others that they talk to, right? And not being afraid to show some vulnerability and going there. That's the only way we're going to come to better understandings of people and be able to do deep dives. Otherwise, yeah, we just remain on the surface and we're not going to grow or change
Yeah,
anything.
beautiful. I love that. I love that. We're gonna have to have Ben on again, and we can have a deeper dive into these subjects. But Ben, let's play out the end of the show with your second song. You're going to have to tell us why you chose it, because we won't be able to come back to you at the end, because it will take us to the hour. So what's your second song you've chosen, and why?
Cool. So this one's called Legacy by Nicole Norderman. It has a similar tone to the message of the Billie Eilish song earlier. But yeah, it's really about what is the legacy we leave behind? I mean, is it about how much money we make? Is it, these kind of surface things? Or is it about, did we choose to love people? Did we choose to put care into the world? And so that's why I really like this one.
Oh, I love that. I love that. If everybody could contemplate what they would think or say or do on their deathbed, I think the world would be a completely different place. This is Legacy. We've been with Ben. Thank you very much indeed, Ben. I'd love to speak to you some more. I know I will personally. If you want to find Ben, is there an Instagram account or something people can follow you on?
Yeah, my Instagram is Ben UPM. I'm on LinkedIn, or I'm pretty easy to find.
Yeah, okay, lovely. Brilliant. Thanks a lot, Ben. This is Legacy by Nicole Nordman.